It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Richie, Mac OS, Ken, and Andy Iannocco join us to talk about a lot of things, including a ship date for the Mac Pro, which one you should buy, and is the iPod dead? It's all next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 379, recorded December 3rd, 2013. A big block of cheese. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MacBreak1213. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/MacBreak. And by PDF Pen Scan Plus from Smile, the scanning and OCR app for your iPhone and iPad. Now you can go paperless wherever you are by turning your receipts and contracts into searchable PDFs. It's the power of your office in your pocket. Learn more at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all your Macintosh and Apple needs. We fulfill you each and every Tuesday, starting with Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times. Mr. I, nice to see you.
We complete you.
Oh, Mac Break Weekly.
Jerry Maguire reference?
You
too old?
Complete me. Is that from Jerry Maguire?
Yep. Isn't it that?
I always think of it from Austin Powers and Mini-Me.
Oh, Mini-Me, you complete me.
Which came first? Oh,
no. Jerry Maguire was You Had Me at Hello.
You Had Me at Hello is the classic, yeah.
That was also in the long list of movies where I've never seen the movie, but
what?
I know the three catchphrases you're supposed to know from that movie.
Show me the money.
What? Exactly.
Cuba Gooding's very, very beautiful, moving speech. You Had Me at Hello, Renee Zellweger.
Mm-hmm. And you'd have to do the entire thing. You have to do the entire.
You complete me. And who said that and when? I'm trying to remember that.
No, I just wanted the Mini-Me one.
I only know the Mini-Me one.
You complete me.
Like Mini-Me. Oh, no, that's from the rap beatdown. Mini-Me, you complete me.
And the little guy who says the human head weighs 7 pounds. That's another good. That's a great movie now that I think about it. A perfect holiday movie.
You know, if in the holidays you're in the mood for one gratuitous crap joke every 2.3 minutes, there you go.
That's the show.
Unfortunately, Christmas Vacation, despite being a classic, only has one.
Yeah.
And you have to wait like until Cousin Eddie comes on and empties out the septic tank in order to get there. It just doesn't deliver. Hollywood just does not deliver the way it used to.
So apparently it was Renee Zellweger saying it. I remember now, she's translating, a deaf couple are speaking in the elevator. And she translates, "You complete me." Yeah, now that you haven't seen that movie, you got to see that movie.
Oh, well, again, romantic comedies. Not when I was like 28, 29, 30, I wasn't really that.
You weren't going to rom coms.
That's exactly.
It was, as long as he's right.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to YouTube, we know exactly what happened.
I should say I'm not religious about not seeing Jerry Maguire. For a charity event to complete a Kickstarter stretch goal, I would see.
Just watch this.
We work in a business of tough. Competitors.
Tough competitors. This is only 50 seconds. They're going to get to the couple quickly.
I love you.
Oh, my God. It's
you.
Old me, Leo.
Complete me. I'm not just head.
Just shut up. You had me at hello.
Oh, so. You get 2-in-1.
The daily double.
2-in-1.
You see, the thing with Tom Cruise is there's all this gossip column entertainment stuff around him, but he's still actually a very good actor. We tend to forget that.
That's the only scene he's ever been a good actor in.
Oh, no, you're wrong.
No, that movie where he was the bad guy, the overweight bad guy dancing in the circle.
Magnolia.
No, not Magnolia.
He's very good in Magnolia.
Right. He was good in Magnolia. He was good in Born on the 4th of July.
I should probably introduce the rest of this cast because we've really gotten a rattle.
Oh, come on. Let's skip over Bonnie. Exactly. Bonnie Hunt. We were about to skip over Bonnie Hunt. Jerry Maguire had one of the most powerful supporting casts we've ever seen in a movie. If it got Jonathan Lipnicki before we fully fell in love with Jonathan Lipnicki.
If I ever said I would never do a geek culture show, I think I just did.
Tropic Thunder. He was outstanding.
Tropic Thunder. Was he the black guy in Tropic Thunder?
No, he was the guy behind the scenes, the bald guy who was just doing dancing.
Disgusting guy with a monkey.
Yes.
Renee Ritchie is here from iMore.com. Tropic Thunder, terrible movie.
Terrible movie.
Great premise. Brilliant premise. Should have been brilliant.
Great Tom Cruise performance. Nothing else of note.
Yeah. And also, all the way over there, Mac OS Ken Ray. Happy newlywed Ken Ray. Congratulations.
Sounds like you're giving me one. Thank you.
It's the Newlywed Show.
this is the payoff for all of our regular listeners. I mean, July, August, September, they're thinking, you know, I really want to tune in to hear pop culture references and discussions about movies. And then their friend said, don't worry, they'll get to it in December when there's absolutely no news and they need to fill an hour.
And no Mac news.
Wait until there's no more Mac rumors, no more iPhone releases, no more iPads, no more legal stuff. Then they'll start saying, but the thing with Gene Hackman is, when we saw him in Bonnie and Clyde, he didn't have that sort of on-screen experience that he would exhibit later on. And, you know, like a movie like Heist. Now, it's David Mamet, I know. So you have to sort of get around the fact that's a very dialogue-y sort of picture. But still, the fact that he's using the times between his lines, Gene Hackman, in order to really shape the... How'd we do? Another
all right,
90 seconds?
All right. See, if you're going to do this, then I actually have to take... If you're going to do this, I have to take issue with something you said a minute ago. There are actually two fantastic crap jokes in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
What kind of jokes? Crab jokes?
Crap.
I know. Crap. Yeah, that was
so, so we got the one of Cousin Eddie emptying the RV septic tank into the storm.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic. Yeah, yeah. Who could ever forget?
You know, my favorite one, though, is when the little kid is talking to Clark about the fact that her brother is concerned that since they're not home, Santa Claus is not going to know where they are. And she says, him's... Mm-hmm. Bricks.
Okay.
And Clark says, I don't think you should be talking that way. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. Hims, mm-hmm, rocks.
Ken Ray has something new that he wants us to mention, by the way. You're doing something on Newsstand.
I am, because it seems like you have to now, doesn't it?
Everybody's got to do it.
So I've been writing a daily Apple News podcast for the past 7.5 years, close to 8. It'll be 8 in January. And it's always kind of bothered me that once the newscast is done, it's just done. There's all this content that I'm producing, you know, the people listen to and they like it. And I really love that. But then there's, you know, I felt like there should be something more that I could do with the content that I was producing. So I've started a magazine for a Newsstand called iChart. That's EYE, iChart magazine. $4.99 is a free trial on Newsstand if you want to try it out. And it's a daily read. It's basically the same thing that I'm doing with the podcast, but you can go back and reference it, and there are pictures, and there'll be more content as it goes. Right now, it's just sort of it is repurposing and, you know, providing links and stuff like that. Think of it as, hey, there it is.
Think that's of it a like, neat thing. So, but it's text, right?
It's text, yeah. If you scroll through there, yeah, there you
now
go.
Now, why so Newsstand? Like because we've talked before about Marco Arment and others just railing that Newsstand is no longer, there's no reason to be a Newsstand anymore.
You're right. I'm done. It was a fun thing for a minute.
Leo, when you poke holes in people's boats, do you like to use an awl or like a power tool to do that?
There's another great crap joke. No, sorry.
No. I'm hoping that you will provide the, you know, other. So Marco says Newsstand. He does something in Newsstand called a magazine. Mm-hmm. He says Newsstand sucks in iOS. But the other thing is, you know, that frankly, because you can have auto-renewing subscriptions in any app now.
Yeah, it's post-iOS 7 Newsstand.
Yeah, that's not that Newsstand sucks, but once iOS 7 came out, it seemed like they didn't have any real advantage.
Yeah, anymore. They gave all the things that used to be exclusive to Newsstand were the auto-renewing subscriptions, that you could change the cover art on the actual cover, and that Newsstand was a folder, not an app, so people could always see there was something new in there and be inclined to go into it, and you couldn't hide it away because it was a default app.
Right.
Post-iOS 7, everyone gets the auto-download, everyone gets auto-renew subscription. You don't get cover art, but because Newsstand acts more like an app and people can hide it, you don't get the advantage of discoverability either, and it's bad enough that you can't even spotlight search for Newsstand once you do hide it, so it's possible to lose it forever.
He also says background downloads and silent content available push notifications that were only available in Newsstand apps prior to iOS 7 are available to all apps, and the new NSURL session background download system is better than Newsstand's old NK asset download system.
And you can't change. Once you're in Newsstand, if you change to a normal app, you lose your existing subscriptions.
So now how do you feel, Ken?
Honestly, there are a couple of things I'll say. This was an idea that started, I want to say, actually in May of 2012. And initially, my thinking was, I can, you know, I'll do this and it'll be great. And so I talked to a friend of mine about building me an app for it. And at the time, we're in what? iOS...
Yeah, you're still in six.
We're still in five at that point. In May of 2012, we're still in five. And so he starts looking around for different, you know, possible solutions and decides for him it wouldn't be worth it to write the app because he and I would be doing this sort of not quite pro bono, but he'd be basically doing it for his cost. And he figured he would not be able to turn it back around and do something else.
Right.
So at that point, I kind of shelved the idea. I start doing some of the daily work that I will be doing, but I sort of shelved the idea. But I'm still looking around for different possibilities. It was when Don McAllister started screencasts online that I looked into his thing.
Right.
And what he was using was something called Magcast, which I'm using now. And I think they're working on something for Android. Right now they are iOS. But the other reason, honestly, is my show is macOS Ken, and I figure that's probably people who are going to be most interested in that are going to be in the iOS ecosystem anyway.
Well, that's for sure. It's just a question of whether it should be an app. And don't you have an app anyway? You have another app, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Yes, that was actually built by Libsyn or by Wizard Media.
Oh, okay. So it's in conjunction with them. The podcast app is from Wizard. Yeah.
Yeah, the podcast app is from them. Yeah. So basically, you're looking at like a year and a half of working on it, up until it launched, I guess, in the middle of October.
I think the things Marco's talking about aren't significant from your point of view.
Probably not from mine, no. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, who knows what it's going to be 6 months or a year from now. I mean, I am kind of intrigued by the idea that Magcast seems to be working on an Android thing. I hope I've got that right. I hope I'm not saying anything I'm not supposed to say out loud. It seems like I read that someplace, but I'm not 100% certain. I may end up, you know, adding to that as well. But as it stands right now, it's...
Yeah, because a lot of us Macintosh users are Android users. It doesn't necessarily follow that you have to use an iPhone if you use a Mac.
No, for sure.
Well, I mean, there have already been some changes to it. Initially, I thought it was just going to be an iPad only thing because I like the way it looks on the iPad. And then immediately got some emails from people saying, "Yeah, I only read stuff on my phone." Like, you know, they read it on their way to work or something like that. And so they hated the first week of it because it was just a gigantic iPad screen that you had to, you know, pinch and zoom and poke around and move through on the iPhone, which is sort of terrible. Remember how neat we thought that was when it first came
at
out?
At the time,
so
seemed
awesome.
Like a good idea at the time.
Zoom all the way into this website, and now we like go to a website where you have to zoom in, and you're like, sucks. Go on to something else.
By the way, not an insignificant point. The ground is constantly moving. Yep.
Yeah, no, there was a story that I did on today's edition of macOS Ken that was, who is it? Branding Brand. I love their name. Branding Brand is this company that does mobile applications for retailers. So it's a lot of people. It's like Kate Spade and Dick's Sporting Goods and Ace Hardware. And I can't remember all the other ones, but they've got like 200 that they're doing. And they say that the spending on sites that are optimized for mobile increased something like 170-something% this year.
Wow.
And it's worth remembering that they also, you know, build mobile applications. So,
right.
Or mobile websites. So, I mean, they've got a vested interest in it. At the same time, they're dealing with a whole lot of, you know, big companies that are saying that's...
Yeah, this is the story on smartphone-optimized sites.
Yeah.
Smartphone optimized sites. Black Friday sales were up 187%. Thanksgiving sales up 258% over last year. Everything's moving to mobile. I just saw stats about Twitter and Facebook and their age demographics, and significantly a larger portion of young people are using it in mobile. Yeah. Mobile's the future.
Yeah, it's also the same as the old copper story, right? When you couldn't put copper line down, but these countries could go immediately to mobile technology. Now you can't afford a computer. You can still, your first computer is now a mobile device.
And a pretty darn good one. I did a story on Twitter. I thought it was really fun about when the total computer power in the world matched that of an iPhone 5 in your pocket. And it was sometime between 1964 and 1969. Up before that point, the total world computing power was less than one iPhone 5.
My father was an engineer at IBM in the 60s and 70s, and he came in one day with a terabyte hard drive, and he said, "Do you know that we couldn't store this much in cities?"
Yeah.
You know, just a few years ago.
Yeah. So that's really, that's what's wonderful about this business, actually. Hey, I want
to
take a break.
This week in old men.
Leo, can I just mention the
I'm sorry, no. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say the thing from Marco, just to be fair to Marco, that was based on an article in Pando Daily by Hamish McKenzie. He was talking to Glenn Fleischman, the new owner of the magazine, and he was saying that discoverability is way down in iOS 7, and that's what hurts him. It's not.
Glenn Fleischman owns the magazine?
Yeah, Marco sold everything. Yeah, he sold Instapaper. He sold everything, and he's working on a podcast client now. And Glenn Fleischman is the one who
joined an ashram.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's what he made a lot of money on Instapaper, right?
And Tumblr, the Tumblr sale.
And Tumblr.
Well.
Oh, that's right. He was early. He was like the first programmer.
The second
at Tumblr,
employee. Yeah.
Second employee. Yeah. So that's right. Well, so now he's just like on his yacht writing a podcast app, because God knows when I retire, that's what I want to do.
If I could write a podcast client, I would.
Well, no, I mean, I had so much respect for those decisions. It just seemed, I don't know him that well myself, but from what he was talking about and what he's talked about those decisions since, it really just seemed like,
oh yeah,
I wrote these apps because I wanted to do certain things. I think I've done those things with them. It's time to get. And he didn't, unlike so many other developers where they lose interest then drift away, he made sure that he took his kid and said, well, here, or rather, I can't take care of this kid. I don't want to take care of this kid anymore. Here, you love it.
Yeah.
And so he sold Instapaper and he sold the magazine to people who are continuing to do great things with it.
And he followed his bliss, which is nice.
Exactly. Great move.
God bless him.
Everyone. It's December. I'm sorry.
By the way, you must have seen. I'm gonna make a wild guess here that Andy Iannacco recently saw a movie. What was the name of that? We had the guy on who did it. Oh yeah, it was the guy who founded TriCaster.
Tim's Vermeer.
Did you just see Tim's Vermeer?
No. What I did was I heard your incredibly cool triangulation interview of him. I had heard. I'm a Penn and Teller fan, so I'd heard about this documentary.
Teller produced it, right?
Right. Teller directed it. Penn and Teller produced it.
Right.
About the guy who you know, so many people I think know the story. The guy who invented started the video toaster, now makes the company that makes a TriCaster, had a
Tim Jennings, about how wonderful guy, by the way, sweetest guy ever.
So the basic story is that he had this brainwave about how a lot of these like old masters might have painted, that they might have used technology. It wasn't just simply like hold up your thumb like this and paint what you see. It was lenses and mirrors that allow them to really closely translate not only the shapes and lines, but also the tones and the colors. And as an experiment, decided, okay, let's a small experiment worked out great. So he said, okay, I've got the money. I've got lots of money, so I'm going to build an exact reproduction of the room that a famous old master painting was set in. So he built this room, bought the harpsichord, had like all these props made specifically to match exactly the painting, and then spent with no art training whatsoever, set down to duplicate it. So I'm sorry. So the quick answer to your question was that I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm really excited to see it. Vanity Fair, I think, had a longer. Now that it's debuting in New York and L.A. to make it eligible for Academy Award nominations next year. So now we find. I'm always looking about. I want to see the painting. And Vanity Fair had this huge, huge scan of the painting, and I'm like, oh my God, this is just the guy who did literature.
So that's what's interesting. Is that the original Vermeer on your screen, or is that Tim's Vermeer?
That's Tim's Vermeer, and it's apparently
indistinguishable from the original.
You can tell the difference between the two, obviously, because there are minute differences. But if you did not see the two labeled side by side, you would not know that this was painted by a legitimate old master and this painting is worth tens of millions of dollars and it's owned by the British royal family. This one was designed by a guy who made some money in electronics and hadn't really picked up a brush before. This is his second painting.
Yeah.
The first one in color.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Yeah. He had no experience.
He's onto something with these lenses and mirrors idea.
It's just fascinating. David Hockney was the first to presume that Vermeer may have used some sort of optical technology to do it, because it really was a breakthrough in the use of photorealism in that era. If you want to see the interview, it's from Triangulation episode 118. And Tim Jennison is just the greatest guy anyway. Yeah. But what a story that is. And I'm glad the movie – I haven't seen the movie either. I can't wait to see it.
I haven't seen it yet. It's like as soon as it's available, I want to see it. And of course, there's a lot of controversy about like the art historian saying, oh, how droll for you to say that these painters weren't talented and it's all just an artifice that they had. And I'm like, no, this is awesome. Vermeer was a geek.
Right.
He was like, I want to develop. I can't draw as well as I want to draw. I bet that I can develop a gadget that will let me compose the. He was a photographer before there was technology for photography. He was a digital artist before there was the technology for Photoshop. And he said, I bet with lenses and mirrors, I can make up for what I'm not painting the way I want to paint. I bet I can. Oh, God. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. By the way, you can't see the original painting unless you're a friend of the Queen of England, because it's in Buckingham Palace. Yep. And and Tim Jennison has never seen it in person.
No, didn't. No, I think he did.
Maybe he did.
I think they let him in.
He was able to, in some of the interviews, he talks about the first time he was able to see it up close instead of with a digital like reproduction or printed reproduction. He was like, oh, my God, it's even five times more.
Right.
Optically lit.
The details.
It's an optical reproduction even 10 times more intensely than I imagined it was. I had no idea. Now I'm even doubly sure that this is how he did this.
Yeah.
By the grace of Her Majesty, the Queen of Canada, he was able to.
Let's make sure everybody understands that's the Queen of Canada.
Yes.
Just bring over some tickets.
But he said the detail was fantastic.
Yeah, seeing it in person. You're right. Now I remember that, because he did talk about that a little bit. Yeah.
The little strings and things that he could make out.
Yeah. See, the reproductions, none of them do it justice, except for maybe Tim's. We're going to take a break, come back with more. We do have some news. In fact, I want to find out about the Mac Pro. And this guy over here, Mr. Rene Ritchie, seems to know a little bit about it. We'll see. But first, a word from our friends at Shutterstock.com. Shutterstock is a great place to go. If you need royalty-free images, you'll find the perfect image or video for your next creative project, for a website, for a publication, an advertisement, a video, PowerPoint presentation, keynote presentation, a menu. Visit Shutterstock.com. You can choose from that latest count, and they always put this at the bottom, 31,535,435 royalty-free images with 185,000 added this week alone. Don't forget to click the footage tab up at the top of the Shutterstock.com page to see some of the most beautiful HD footage. Professional photographers, videographers, really high-quality stuff, carefully curated, and a search engine that is second to none. And, you know, it's funny because we're used to Google, which is good, but a lot of the search engines you find on a lot of sites are terrible. And so Shutterstock's really put some energy into not only being able to search for a thing, a noun, but adding adjectives to have a – they have a spectrum color wheel that lets you choose so it fits the palette of the page that you need. I mean, it's – and if you've seen their iPad app, it is – in fact, if you haven't downloaded it, it's free. Just gorgeous. Webby Award winning. Shutterstock.com. Now – Here's the call to action. A couple of things I want you to do. First of all, do create an account there. It's free. You don't have to give them a credit card. Once you have an account, you can use the Lightbox feature, which means you can save images just, you know, onto a Lightbox as you see them, which is great for later if you want to buy them, or just even inspiration or sharing with another designer, you know, or you're working with a designer saying, you know, I have some ideas. This is in that ballpark. Use Shutterstock. They encourage you to do that. If you do decide you want to buy, you'll get 25% off your first purchase on a new account when you use our offer code MacBreak1213 for its December 2013, of course. We have the subscription, which is the best deal, 25 images a day. And 25% off, that is a really, really good deal. MacBreak1213, but you can buy individual images, image packs as well. MacBreak1213. 1213 to save 25% at Shutterstock.com. I'd like you to consider them for your stock image needs. So I saw you in the chat room say we will definitely have a Mac Pro by the end of the year.
Yes. Well, Apple said it first.
Yeah. They said December.
Yes, absolutely.
But is that December 4th or is it December 31st?
The only thing I've heard is that, like the Retina iPad Mini, is that they will get them out as absolutely soon as their production allows them to get it out.
And they surprised us with the Retina Mini, right?
So it's just a matter of getting them on the trucks, getting them to the stores and selling them, putting them online.
Now, we thought the Retina Mini would be in great short supply. That actually hasn't turned out to be so much the case.
It's not what they want. It's not like you can go into a store and have tons and tons of iPad Airs like the first day. For an Apple launch, it was constrained.
And yet, much less than some of the other Apple launches we've seen. What about, I guess the Mac Pro is not going to, you're not going to sell millions in the first day.
I don't think there'll be lineups, no.
Well, I mean, maybe there will. There's a certainly pent-up demand. My Mac Pro is, like everybody else's, 2-3 years old.
Absolutely.
Now. Yeah.
And they're not, I mean, they're being mailed, they're made in the USA.
Let's put it this way. The kid uses the Mac Pro now.
Best home theater PC.
The kid is using the cheese grater, even though it has I've upgraded it with a very fast SSD and in the most recent video card I can put in there.
I edit on my Retina MacBook Pro because it's faster than my first gen Nehalem Mac Pro.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I look forward to this. I don't know if I'll buy it. It's going to be, we know, $2,500 starting.
We know what you're saying. You don't think you're going to buy it means.
I know. I actually canceled. I was going to buy the new Sony mirrorless, the A7R. I was going to buy it about the same price, $2,300, I think. Yeah. So I canceled that, which tells me that subconsciously I want to buy the Mac Pro.
And speaking of Marco, he did an assessment of all the processors that are available. And you can get an entry-level Mac Pro that is not much of a performance hit, but is also more affordable than... getting close to the 10K mark.
I am certainly going to buy the base level. There's no justification for buying anything more than the base level. So he points out that Nontech did a price list of the Xeon E5 2600 V2. This is an older one. Yeah. This is from August. Is there a newer one from Marco? Let's go to marco.org and see. What he's got here.
But yeah, based on the parts, Turbo Boost and the new Mac Pro CPUs, getting even an entry level one is,
that's gonna be fine.
Yeah,
here's the table. Yes. With the new Mac Pro's imminent prospective buyers, understand the odd looking CPU options. So you go from a 1620, these are all E5 Xeons, through the 1650, 1680, or 2697.
And they're non-Haswell.
And we're talking the cost, not when he says likely cost, that's the cost of the processor.
Yeah.
So the top-of-the-line processor is $2,500.
Yes.
More than the whole Mac Pro.
Before you get the Mac
level.
Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. So double the amount of money or something for the high end. That's 12 cores.
I think it tops out around 10K, I think, for the fully loaded.
I think that this is, it used to be that the Mac Pro was for, you could even make it a prosumer sort of, ambitious amateur or prosumer level machine. The more I look at this and the more I talk to people who know about this sort of architecture, know what this all spells out, the more convinced I am that this is one machine that, unless you have a really specific reason why you need that sort of power, you should just be happy with an iMac, or even be happy with a Mac Mini, or be happy with a Retina MacBook Pro, because they're already so many, these devices, these consumer grade Macs are already so overpowered. I mean that in a good way. They're there for your needs plus at least 20% to 25% to 30% that I can't imagine many people who would actually see the performance advantages of a Mac Pro. As I'm often saying, most of the CPU power is there to count to a million between cursor flashes while it waits for you to type the next word.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing to point out is that the core speeds of the low end are faster than the nominal core speed is faster. Sometimes that makes more difference than the number of cores, right?
I made a mistake and I got a lot of really slow cores in my Nehalem Mac Pro, and I wish I'd gone the other way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
very little takes advantage of all those cores.
Right. So unless you know you're doing something that's going to take advantage of 12 cores.
If you don't work at Pixar or push everything to OpenCL, you're probably fine.
Right. Yeah. I mean, certainly for Pages, a 3.7 gigahertz single core would probably be more than you need.
QuickView will still beach ball, but Pages will be fine.
I mean, really, if I buy a Mac Pro, and I suspect this is true of a lot of people, it's because of how it looks.
Yes.
Right?
Or you want a piece of the future in your hand today. That's Apple's pitch with this. It's the hypercar, the supercar, the Lamborghini of computers.
Yeah.
And some people just want that today. They don't want to wait.
I think that's a very appropriate comparison too, because a Lamborghini is by no means a practical solution to any problem. I'm serious. It's expensive.
The solution is I want one, Andy. That's the solution.
It's the answer to the question. Can I have it now?
It's an answer to the problem of my accountant says if I still have $1.2 million in my bank account, it has to go to either charity or the government or a new car. I want a new car. I don't have time to shop for 20 new cars. I want to smash into each other. So I'll just smash up the one car that I don't know how to drive.
And yet it does solve a problem that is imminent, which is 4K video workflow.
Yes.
And, we all, laughed when HD, 1080p video came out and you couldn't use anything to edit it. In fact, it wasn't that long ago. It was the first MacBreak video that Alex Lindsay shot maybe 5 years ago. And I couldn't play it back, let alone edit it.
We tried to do one. We tried to do one 5-minute 4K video. It took us 3 days to render it and forever to upload it.
So and that may become more common. But certainly creating, editing and uploading 1080p video is now commonplace. We all do it.
Yep.
Our phones do it. So it doesn't seem that far-fetched to think that this Mac Pro, if you expect to use it for a few years, will be editing 4K video.
Yeah.
Right?
So if you need to drive three 4K displays and a bunch of Thunderbolt displays.
Now, let's talk about 4K displays, because Dell has now announced a 24-inch very high-res display, but still no word from Apple. Now, Apple says the Mac Pro is 4K ready. Does Apple expect us to buy Dell monitors?
I kept hearing rumors that Apple's working on a 4K display, because 4K is a good marketing term and it's slightly less than Retina, so it's probably more doable than to pixel double the current 27-inch Thunderbolt display. But until they announce something, it's just, like Andy said this oftentimes, Apple's probably working on everything.
Yes, but it's meaningless.
Until it becomes a product and I can buy it, it doesn't mean much.
But Apple's got to look and say, I don't want Dell to get all the revenue.
But Apple's also a patient company. Like, they're not going to – a lot of the 4K stuff that's been rushed to the consumers at this point has been very low frame rate or very low refresh rate, not the best quality panels. It'll be interesting to see what Dell did. I think one of the early ones was 30 megahertz. I forget the measure. But when Apple does it, they'll probably do one as good a quality as a Thunderbolt display, and that's still a much harder job to do.
Dell has a 32-inch model, the Ultra HD monitor, the UP3214Q. It's $3,500. It is 3840 by 2160, which is not Cinema 4K, which is 496. That may hurt them. It's not quite as wide as Cinema 4K, which means that video editors are not going to maybe be too happy with this. The 24-inch will be available December 16th. That's a little less expensive, only $13.99.
Only problem Apple faces is if people buy this, either they don't want to wait for Apple, they don't think Apple's going to do it, and they buy this, then they will not buy an Apple One when they come out.
Right. I mean, it feels like the clock is ticking for Apple. I would love a 32-inch display, but it's going to cost more than the computer.
Yeah. I don't think there's any... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm wondering, do you...
I'm sorry. I thought I heard someone say, go ahead. I will shut up. Go.
Ray.
All right. Do you really think Apple's not going to have one to go the same day as the Mac Pro?
Well, that's the question. It sort of feels like they would.
I'm basing that on nothing except for the fact that people are going to go in. I mean, there are going to be businesses that do it, and then there are going to be high-end consumers or prosumers or, professionals who work solo are going to go in, and they're ready that day to spend money, right? So it seems like Apple would have one ready to go, assuming it's technically feasible.
If they were confident, though, I think we would have seen it at the event.
By now.
Pure sex appeal.
Andy, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
All I was going to say is that I don't think any company is better prepared to sell 4K displays than Apple is, because there is a store in pretty much every major mall in America that can sell a 4K display. They are going to get people who are interested in purchasing these things, not because of the same reason why a couple years ago some dimwits were buying 3D TVs, because, hey, new shiny, this is better than one that I have right now. So as a result, it's not just a case of, as you're saying, Leo, not getting a good display, not just a technically 4K display, but also making sure that there's not a 3-month wait list. It's good. It's in some ways it's good PR to say that, well, look, our phones and our tablets are so popular, there's a 2-week wait before they'll ship. If that flips over to, well, we've got your credit card number on file, you'll definitely be getting one as soon as we get that magical 2 out of every 2,000 panels that is actually serviceable and has the color red in it somewhere. So I think Apple, as usual, has problems that few other tech manufacturers have.
So I think the answer Ken, is that yes, Apple would love to, wants to, would, is dying to, and can't. Right?
Yeah. That's what makes me think that it's a supply issue. I don't think they want to actually. They don't have to pre-announce it, and I don't think they want to announce until they're sure that they have those panels on a ship somewhere.
But boy, you'd kind of again want to kind of at least encourage people not to buy the Dell. And I figure Apple's is going to be $4,096. It's going to be production, because who is buying a Mac Pro? It's a video editor working in 4K. That's who's going to buy the $10,000 Mac
it's
Pro.
Pixar. It's people Pixar. Like Alex Lindsay.
Yeah, Alex will buy him.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense to do a consumer ultra high def. It makes sense to do true 4K.
Alex will buy all of them.
So, remember, the WWDC is going to be in July or June, right. And Apple's going to want like a wall of 4K displays for the right. next like application shower display. So
right,
they better say Apple on the logo.
Exactly.
Apple buys Topsy for $200. I think this must be an acquire. I don't know how to pronounce that, so that you hear the H. $200 million. Topsy is a social media analysis company. Allows customers to... They're one of the few companies that has the fire hose from Twitter. That by itself is valuable, although there's no guarantee that if Apple buys them, that Apple would get the fire hose. In fact, I pretty much guarantee they wouldn't.
Well, they're good partners. I mean, they do partner in a lot of things.
Somebody said that Apple must have gotten... You know, Apple is a Twitter partner, must have said to Twitter, hey, we want to buy Topsy. Is that okay with you? Although I don't, it doesn't sound
it's,
like
it's hard to well, it's hard to see the value in Topsy unless they have access to real time Twitter information,
which they do.
The real exactly, and that pipeline stays open.
Yeah, oh,
because
I see,
the really cool nature of this buy is that it's not normally we think about okay, what software do they want, what personnel do they want, what patents do they want. This time, the thing they're buying is inherently incredibly valuable, and it's just the ability to at any given second know what people are talking about, what are people interested in, what's getting the most conversation going, and that can feed into so many of their products. If it were just there to tell iTunes what products it needs that should be promoting, if it just needs to be there to just be a real-time microscope on what people are thinking at any given moment, that's worth $200 million of any company that has $4 billion every 4 weeks to spend.
Yeah, it's sentiment analytics, and that's incredibly valuable because you know what your customers are talking about, what interests them, what media. And for a retailer like Apple, it's valuable just to know better what to sell. But for a company that wants to do all the other services that they provide, to be able to plug that sort of information into a context-aware search engine, if they happen to have one, you know, handy like Siri, it's just incredibly valuable.
So it isn't necessarily the engineers; it's the platform.
There's a story from Dr. Richard Feynman's biography, which he talks about being on the ground floor at the Manhattan Project at Los Alamos, and where they've just developed essentially nuclear energy, and the government wants to patent every single idea. And just to be funny, he says, "Oh, here's 100 ideas for how to use a nuclear reactor." And he talks about here's how you hook it up to a submarine, you got a nuclear sub, you hook this generator, you got this nuclear generator, you got this blah 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 blah. And that's what I'm thinking about right now. It's not the product is the ability to turn a drive shaft. You can hook up that drive shaft to 100 different things. If the drive shaft is what are people thinking about and talking about right now, you can hook that information up to any. If you're a service-based company or if you want your services to be better, that is such a big win for everybody.
And in a related story, maybe this is this tells you something. Sumall, which is a sponsor and run by our friend Dane Atkinson, just raised another $4 million. There's a lot of venture interest in. They do a somewhat similar thing, business analytics. They're of course, bringing in Twitter, but other stuff as well. That really is a hot topic right now, I guess. The question is, is Apple buying this for their own use? Is Apple buying this to create a product? Is Apple buying this for the engineers? What is Apple going to do with Topsy?
I think they get everything out of this. My old job before iMore was working in high-end analytics. Oh. And we did stuff like market basket analysis and sentiment analysis. And all of that is incredibly important. Like if you, for example, the classic story was if you made Coke, you don't really know who's buying it because 7-Eleven sells it. You don't have that data. But 7-Eleven can compile that data and sell it to you. And they can sell that data to Pepsi. And they can sell it data to Lay's to say what people are buying.
Yeah.
And they could do things like the classic example was beer and diapers. You know, if you bought beer and diapers, they could figure out who you were. They didn't need to know your name. And then they could figure out how to give you promotions and sales. And if you run retail, this information is worth, you know, its weight in gold. And if you can add sentiment to that, what people actually like and talk about, then you can better target all your sales efforts, all your marketing efforts, all your product and services efforts. It's that prescience that Google now enjoys in a large
So it sounds like it's really a hire for its own internal use, that Apple wants to apply this to its retail efforts. And
it looks like Andy said, like you could apply this to so many things that Apple does. Yeah. And engineers like that are incredibly smart. Engineers that can do that are very valuable as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's high-end stuff.
So people have basically been thinking, okay, well, Apple is either going to try to figure out what's trend, like basically see how it's going to be doing, or, sorry, Apple is trying to figure out how it's doing. So it reads that off of Twitter. That's a sentiment thing you're talking about, I think, Renee.
Yeah, and how people feel about Apple support and Apple products. And absolutely. Do they like the 5C better than the 5S? You could tell that from sales numbers alone, but it's much more interesting to say, oh, the 5C is pretty, but I wish they had blue. There's a lot of stuff in there. That is more than just what sells.
Or every time someone buys a MacBook, they also say they bought this kind of thing. So these are the kind of bundles we should put together.
More beer and MacBooks, yeah, clearly. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's
I'm sorry.
Crazy. No, it's okay. I mean, people, it seems to me, I mean, the news of the acquisition's only been out, I think, 24 hours, right?
Yeah.
But most of the stories I've seen have been sort of an either or thing. Like, okay, well, this is going to tell Apple what they can, you know, push on iTunes, or this is going to tell Apple how people are responding to something, but it's. I mean, it seems incredibly stupid to say it's not an either or thing, but it's not an either or thing. It's kind of
right. It's all of them.
Kind
all
of mind blowing, actually. Yeah.
I think the one thing that they probably won't do is sell this as a service to other companies, right? They want if any information they know, they're keeping
iAd
themselves.
Maybe like if they put into iAd, then developers will benefit.
That might be a good product, huh?
But it is, and I asked this out of sincerity: is iAd even really a thing anymore?
Well, for iRadio, I mean, it's built into a lot. It's built into some of the stuff that they're exploring.
It's how you make it more of a thing.
And there's this principle called
you make it more valuable.
There's this principle called least expensive offer. For example, if you give someone a coupon for $25, everyone in the world is going to redeem that coupon, but it costs you a lot of money.
Right.
So you want to figure out how to get the most people interested by spending the least amount of money. And that's the kind of stuff all this analytics can give you.
Very useful stuff. We don't have anything nearly sophisticated. We just have twit.tv/survey. It is the most primitive means of finding out what our audience thinks that I can imagine. But that's what we got.
No, I have in my other room the most primitive means of finding out what an audience is thinking. That is a TV Nielsen's logbook.
Oh, my God.
Which looks like a medical SAT test book from 1969.
Now, were you sent this by Nielsen or somebody gave this to you?
No, Neil. They sent me a diary for like last week.
You're not supposed to talk about that, you know.
People have said that to me before. There, I carefully read the cover letter and what was inside the book. Nothing said that you're not allowed to tell people that you have this thing.
You know, and Nielsen and Radio both, and Arbitron and Radio have both moved to automated people meter systems, but the diary systems persist. And I mean, there's all sorts of problems with diary systems. Radio was diary only for a long time.
This was, I mean, I knew in general what a lot of the problems were, but looking at this book and I'm thinking to myself, who is going to, this is not even an
so
easy to fill out set of forms. So you have, you're only sampling a certain amount of people who wanted to take part in this, but also people who felt really, really strongly about it or are very OCD type people to sit down and log everything. I mean, it took me all of, after reading through this and trying to understand the instructions, it took me all of, 10 minutes to create a Google form so that anytime, I'm serious, and was much, much better than their logbook because it actually got me curious as to, for my own interest, I'm interested in seeing when am I watching videos on YouTube? When am I watching actual television?
Does it ask you about that? Does it ask you about non-broadcast viewing?
I'd have to check again. There is some differentiation, but it's not very fine grained. I'm curious as to, I watched this. Well, what was it? It was on YouTube. Okay, did you watch it on a TV screen? Did you watch it on a laptop screen? Did you watch it on a phone?
That would be
fascinating. How long were you watching it? Yeah, and that took, again, it took me all of like 15 minutes, 10 minutes to do. When I saw some holes in it, it took me maybe 2 minutes to update it, to change it. And I have a spreadsheet that I can now, when I sit down and get a couple of shots in me, and I can now transfer all of this information into this logbook. It's like you have to be really, really, really motivated to see the Amazing Race and Bob's Burger get a jump for that week.
Very important point, and it was actually one of the insights that led me to creating Twit. The things that succeed in these kinds of methodologies are things that engage people so much that they're willing to take the time. And you just mentioned two shows you love, Bob's Burger and Amazing Race. And so you're much more likely to write that down than the larger typical audience. But the larger typical audience is very likely undermeasured because they're not obsessive about a show enough to actually take the time. It's one of the reasons people always figured that Rush Limbaugh always got better radio ratings than anybody in his market, because the fans of Rush Limbaugh were much more likely to take the time to say, yes, I listened at 9 to noon Monday through
Friday. I'm a proud listener. As opposed to your nightly newscast where you turn it on, you're actively watching it, but it's not as though I'm a proud watcher of WBZ Channel 4.
You're not. And you're 5:30
a.m. newscast. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons. That insight was what led me to say, we need to create products, whether on broadcast or internet, that engage people so much that they are enthusiastic and they go to twit.tv/survey and they fill the form out. Because those are the people who are most valuable, like 10 times more valuable, frankly. And it's so now, of course, that's why they moved to People Meter. And it was very controversial in radio when they introduced this a couple of years ago. And this is, by the way, why they still do diaries, is because when you find out what people actually do, it's at such great odds from what they write in the diary.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what it does is it raises the issue. God, you mean these numbers we've been buying as advertisers all this time are crap?
I didn't think of that before. I think we all have been in business long enough to know that we have had those relationships with people where, okay, I know what the facts is. Now it's time to ask this person what the fact is, just to find out what they will tell me. So,
right.
Yeah. Well, that makes more sense now.
Yeah.
That was the old joke. Everyone writes down PBS, but everyone really watches TMZ.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. Nobody wants to admit it. I love TMZ.
Well, now TMZ is on PBS.
I have modeled a number of our shows around TMZ, or tried to. I wanted to be the guy who sits on the partition and talks to his staff and says, what do you think about that, hey? And then I have to hold a coffee. I love that. The format of that
show.
The
energy.
The content is crap, but the form – actually, it's not. It's fascinating. But the format of it is so well done. It's how I want to design all our shows from now on. And on that note, I want to ask about – and maybe I read about it on iMore – the idea that I certainly know that you've been saying Apple's moving into fashion, mm-hmm. but the idea that maybe wearables is more than a watch, more than glasses, but something actually wearable. Let's talk about it. There's a little buzz going on in just a second. Renee Ritchie is here from iMore.com and crackberry.com. It's nice to have you in studio.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Mac OS Ken Ray is here from the Mac OS Ken Daily News Podcast. Great to have you, macosken.com. And his new enterprise, iChart.
Yeah, think about, you know, like
iChart. Yeah, iChart. EYE chart.
Right.
Which is in the newsstand on your iPhone.
Which is an awesome place to be.
Love the newsstand. Couldn't be a better place. From the Chicago Sun-Times, it's actually on a newsstand, a physical newsstand, Andy Iannacco.
I was just downloading new content through the Newsstand app, which is where I get most of my news and entertainment these days.
Is the Sun-Times on Newsstand?
No, it isn't. Okay, but we do have a website.
Yes.
that I encourage people to come and visit.
Go visit the website. That's where you'll find Mr. I. Our show today is brought to you by another website where I find almost all of my reading. In fact, I was talking to my daughter yesterday about lending her books, and I realized, oh, wait a minute. Everything is on Audible. I have not bought a physical book in a long, long time because I love listening to Audible.com. Audible, it has 150,000 books. All the bestsellers appear on Audible.com. And I just bought, I just took advantage of my Audible subscription and got a couple of new books that I've been meaning to read for some time. I can show you my library. I've been an Audible member since 2000. Over 500 books here. But I just got Brad Stone's The Everything Store. After seeing Jeff Bezos' quadcopter delivery system on 60 Minutes on Sunday, I thought I better read some more about this nut. And Nick Bilton's Hatching Twitter. Of course, Nick's a good friend of the show, a regular on the show on Twit. And boy, I read the excerpt. I can't wait to read the full story. But you can see I'm just finishing now Difficult Men, Behind the Scenes of a Creative Revolution. From The Sopranos and The Wire to Mad Men and Breaking Bad. And I have to say, Brett Martin has written a wonderful book. Now, here's the deal. One of these could be yours for free. Turkish Phase 1, Unit 1 through 5 from Pimsleur. Yes, they have language courses. And I have to admit, my Turkish lessons have not been going great, but I'm working on it. Just so much great stuff on here. I want you to try it right now by go to audible.com and browse around, find a book. They're read, by some of the best people in the world. Ben Stiller reading The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. That is awesome. So that's going to be a movie with Ben Stiller, right? So this is an interesting tie-in. The classic James Thurber, a novel he reads, and it's free. Oh, movie deal. It's not. It's only 15 minutes. So I guess it should be free. It's a short story. It's not a novel. I take it back. But I'd love to listen to that. That's really cool. So Audible has a lot of freebies like that too. During the election, they always have the debates and speeches and so forth for free. They're really a wonderful company to be involved in. Take it from me, they've been an advertiser on our shows for more than 5 years now. So here's the deal: if you go to audible.com/MacBreak, you can check it out, find a book you want, and you're going to get it for free. This is a really good one. This is one of the Audible has this Audible Frontiers, where they record science fiction that has never been recorded before, audiobooks of it. Paolo's Bacigalupi's The Wind-Up Girl, which is I really enjoyed it. And it really is an evocative, it's perfect for audio, because one of the things that happens with me, and maybe it happens when you read a physical book, but with me, when I hear a book, I see it. And this is a futuristic kind of dystopian future that is so detailed and vivid. No movie could do it justice, I think. But boy, when you do it in your mind, it is stunning. It is spectacular. Anyway, I can go on and on. Audible.com/MacBreak. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's a book a month. First month's free. You also get the daily audio digest of either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. Very nice to have in the car on the way to work. Kind of keep up with what's going on. You can cancel any time in the first 30 days. That book is yours to keep. But I think if you keep going, you'll be glad, because it's just a great way to listen to books when you just don't have time to hold a book or read a book. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support. I didn't ask you, Andy, what you're listening to.
Very quickly, I'm a big fan of audiobooks. I'm a much bigger fan of nonfiction than biography than anything else. Henry Bushkin, who was Johnny Carson's lawyer for a couple of decades, yeah, wrote. Now it's I don't know. I don't want to be gauche. It's almost like if there's a beloved figure, there's like someone sets the hourglass going as to it would be tacky if I wrote a tell-all book today, but certainly by 2013 I can come out with a book, and it won't be Howard. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's not the like complete biography of a very complicated guy that that we're all hoping for. That Carson fans would be hoping for, but it is one person's point of view. It's really. He starts off when Carson needs a lawyer to help him break into his wife's secret apartment so he can prove that this woman has been cheating on him, and then it goes all the way through his retirement. And
Bombastic Bushkin. I gotta listen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's, again, not the complete biography, but an interesting point of view. And if you want dirt, okay, there's dirt here.
I listened to Ed McMahon's biography of Johnny. I'll listen to them all, because I'm a huge Johnny Carson fan.
Did he narrate that one?
Yeah.
Is that distracting to hear Ed McMahon read
for
3 hours?
Mostly it's about heavy drinking. Quite a bit of it. Jimmy the Geek in our chat room is listening to Johnny Ive, Leander Connie's new book. Am I saying his name wrong? Somebody tweeted at me, you've been saying his name wrong the whole show. Leander never corrected me.
I had an old friend who Jony, who pronounced it Joni, and so I tend to just reflexively say Joni. I've been told it's Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny Ive.
Yeah, Johnny Ive.
It's just reflex. I try.
And how about Leander? Leander Connie.
I don't know if it's Kenny or Connie.
Is it Kenny?
I only ever called him. Just call him Leander. Problem
Leander.
Solved.
I got some other ones here from our chat room. MN7 is reading Ball 4 by Jim Boughton. That's a juicy
classic
book.
There you go.
And MN7 says it's funny because Boughton's laughing as he reads it. he's remembering those moments.
Right.
That's awesome. And R. Bonini says the full cast audio play of Ender's Game. Ender's Game Alive is fantastic. I agree. I loved that. I was my refresher before I went to see the movie, and it was really – it made me want to hear more radio plays.
First Dune book is done almost like a play.
Is it?
A lot of it is done as a play. It's very good too.
I just watched I just watched David Lynch's Dune. On the one hand, it's great because I love the books. I love the books. On the other hand, it's so campy.
But you remember it. A lot of the 80s movies you don't remember. Yes.
Yeah.
Your name is a killing word, Leo.
Wadib.
The first movie I ever walked out on.
Yeah. And, well, you were a fan of the Dune novels, I'm sure.
No. I never actually read the Dune novels, but a huge Star Wars fan. This has to be science fiction, epic. It has to be really good. And I walked right out of it. It was like the third time there was like the soundtrack was death, but.
Oh, the soundtrack is so over the top.
Spice. Life. Spice. Life is.
I will not sit here, spice. Sir, and hear you put down the movie, dude.
See, it's really an interesting thing, and there's some polarizing.
Are you serious? Renee, really? You like that movie?
So, full disclosure, we just did a long podcast about it with Guy English and Don,
really?
Don Melton from Apple. Guy English.
What a
talking
coincidence.
About Dune. Because we all love that. Yeah, we're doing 80s movies with Melton. It's a subgenre. We all enjoy it quite thoroughly. The book, the movie, not the miniseries so much.
I didn't see the miniseries.
The Audible book is fantastic, though.
So that, and that's acted out?
It's both. So the original abridged version was acted out. Then they made a non-abridged version by reading the parts in between.
21-hour version.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's made up of the acted out one plus
whatever they
the narrative.
Take it out from the
act. Oh, so that would be the one to get because then it is in my library. Apparently, I've listened to it and I forgot about it. It is one of my all-time favorite books.
The book is phenomenal. Andy, you would like the book far more than the movie.
Oh, yeah. The movie doesn't do it justice.
Oh, yeah, I'm not judging the book at all.
I think if you've seen the book, I mean, read the book, seeing the movie then is kind of nice because you go, oh, yeah.
The movie is very David Lynch.
Sandworms.
The book is not.
Yeah.
No.
Barinhart, Conan.
The one blessing that Dune gave us is David Lynch didn't direct Jedi.
Yes.
I mean, that's really it.
Yeah, because, I don't think he'll be invited to direct any of the Disney.
I don't know. Imagine the Ewoks again, but now imagine them like walking backwards, but the film flips so they're walking forwards and delivering their lines that way. That could have been really nicely creepy Ewoks. Those are Ewoks that could have taken down the garrisons of the Empire's best men.
Just a lot of like close-ups of just Darth Vader just staring at things.
I mean, the miniseries was much more faithful to the book, but they took out all the really cool lines, which is really terrible.
Yeah. The lines from the book or the lines from the movie?
Yeah, the lines from the book. They had some fantastic dialogue in the book, and it was just missing.
It's, I mean, I'll have to listen to your show. Maybe I'll have you on the show.
I'm now in a Dune kick. It's been long enough. I haven't read it in long. Apparently, I have it in my. When did I listen to it?
Well, there's the thing about Dune is I think everybody is a bad guy. Like, there's no real hero in Dune. Everybody is a villain.
Oh, come on. Paul Atreides is a hero.
No spoilers, Leo, but Paul is not a heroic character at the end. He's about to start a jihad.
Oh, man.
There's no good people in that movie.
That's true. There's not a single good guy, is there?
No.
Wow.
That's sad.
Well, what about the Princess Irulan?
Yeah, Princess Irulan. Yeah, she's cool.
She's barely an Anakin Skywalker rendered character.
Yeah, no, she's the narrator, but that's it. Yeah. How about his mother? His mother's nice.
Yeah, but she's. I don't want to spoil it for Andy because he might read it eventually.
All right. Free Mavericks. Go ahead.
Well, I just hate to lose. This is an interesting conversation. I'm really kind of keyed into. I hope that's probably more interesting than like whatever we're about to talk about.
I guarantee you it is.
Now, lightning connectors, some are defective in South America.
Isn't that sad? Isn't that sad? Free Mavericks sets OS 10 adoption record. Free's a good price.
For some people, free's a great price.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Ironically, Mavericks is one of the first OS 10s I would say you shouldn't rush to upgrade to. It introduces some problems that can be deal breakers.
Well, if you had a problem that was like Mountain Lion, if you needed multi-monitor support, it was not good under Lion or multi-line. Yeah, there were several things. Battery life. My MacBook Pro, Retina MacBook Pro, got 2 hours extra battery life after Mavericks. Yeah.
So great in that regard. Yeah. But then there's the core audio issue with YouTube. There's all sorts of weird issues. If you want, you know, I read somebody said, hey, I don't want Finder tabs. I want new Finder windows, and that's gone, and little things like that.
Yeah.
Everybody's got one thing that, you know, you kind of, you know, you might say, oh, man. Would you say the bugs are out now, though? When we finally got the update to the update, is it time to get Mavericks if you haven't? As
a longtime OS 10 user, Leo, you know you just trade one bug for another.
It's
the old core audio issues have led to different core audio issues.
Oh man.
And in the end, the bugs you take are equal to the bugs you make.
Forgive me, I'm not in the chat room, but can I put a question out to the chat room?
Yes, and I'll read back their answers to you.
Does Adobe Audition 5.5 work in Mavericks? I've been going to Roaring Apps since the day Mavericks came out, and they don't have an answer there.
My guess is not, because of the changes in Core Audio. Audition hasn't been updated by Adobe in a while. That's what you use for editing your podcast?
Yes.
And I think it's time to shift over. You know, Audition's what I use, and I love. It is the program. And I try to use Logic and whatever else Apple's been. I guess they don't make anything else. They used to have an editor.
GarageBand and Logic.
GarageBand. Yeah. You can't do anything too long in. And
yeah.
I don't know.
You can work longer in GarageBand, but I don't feel like I have the same level of control. It takes me so much less time because I've been working with Audition since it was cool at it back in 98.
I could do Audition. You know what I use, come to think of it, is Amadeus Pro. Have you tried Amadeus?
I have not.
Rock me. Amadeus. It is, let me see if it's in the App Store. It's like $40. And it's, you know, what the reason that we use Audition is because we just want the waveform, right? And we want to be able to, there's a few things like marking that are different, but it is really good. Amadeus Pro. I don't know if you could download a trial version. They have a light version that's $25, but this is what I use for all my radio ads now and all my audio editing on the radio. It's very similar.
Okay.
You know, it hurt. It was painful making the transition.
Yeah. Well, I've tried several different things. I mean, for a long time, when I first got, I had an iMac several years ago that I actually ran Parallels Desktop on so that I could keep running Adobe Audition when it was only a Windows program. And then for some reason I got off that. I think it was you know, since I was doing a Mac show, I sort of felt like I should try doing this in just an all Apple environment. So I can't remember what I was using, Soundtrack Pro, I think, first. And then I might have switched to GarageBand just to see if I could do it. And I think there might have been one other program in there. But the day they came out with Adobe Audition for the Mac, I was back on it.
Yep.
I mean, just as soon as it could be. And it was like putting on an old comfortable pair of shoes. Yeah. And so the idea of taking them off again, I almost want to like just keep this machine as an homage to whatever it's running now. And then, you know, I'll buy my next machine. I'll go ahead and start upgrading to everything.
Anybody in the chat room using Audition with Mavericks? Here's another one. Rogue Amoeba makes one called Fission. I have not tried. This isn't really look like it's what you want. It's more like for splitting and joining, I would guess.
Yeah.
I would try Amadeus. I think they have a free download on the website, a trial download.
Okay.
It's not the same, but it's close. And I say this as a Cool Edit Pro and Audition user for many years. And just like you, I did it on Windows 'cause I had to.
Yeah.
Here's some good news. Ashton Kutcher's Jobs, the movie, is finally available on the iTunes Store.
They're saying it works fine in 10.9. At least some people in the chat
10.9 works.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. The reason I don't use Audacity, which is great, is that if it ever crashes, which it does, you lose your stuff, it's really sad.
Yes.
That was when I was using that. I can't remember. That was when I was doing GarageBand, I think. I was actually recording in Audacity because it was very easy just to trim the waveform, as you say.
Right.
And then I was dropping it into GarageBand for the multi-track, you know, so I could do the intro and out music without actually having to play it real time.
Right.
And yeah.
You one crash.
Get to that last edit, and you're like, oh, I'm so excited. I'm very close to going to...
Yeah, that's the word I said, too. So there is a trial on the website, which is hairsoft.com. Harrowsoft.com, and it works. It also works very well. It supports VST plugins, though, so if you have all your Audition plugins, will continue to work, which is nice. And Apple's audio units. Never found a compression tool as good as Audition's, though. I don't do any more editing, on the big shows. We do it all in Final Cut, of all things. They do the video. Yeah. They edit, and this makes sense if you're doing video and audio. You do the video edits, and then you extract the audio.
That's what I do now, too.
Do we, Chad, post-process the audio with compression? Because that's something I prided myself on, is using...
Not post-process, but the Axia has... I mean,
yeah, no,
anything
no, that's
going
not
out...
the same. Real-time is not as good as post-processing. Yeah, that's one that kind of we lost.
Yeah, I mean,
for years when I did the audio processing, I used Audition as a very nice compression tool. You could do a nice curve, and I had a dedicated curve that I think gave the, if you listen to the earlier podcast, the punch that was there, almost a trademark of the earlier Twitch shows. And yeah, I realized that we lost that a long time ago. So
if you're working on Final
Cut, bring it back.
Get a curve from Leo.
We should. I had a good curve. SoundForge is still around from Sony. I had the guy who did SoundForge, or maybe he did Acid. He was in the studio a couple of weeks ago visiting us. Anyway, let's get back to the more important story, Jobs the Movie by Ashton Kutcher. Did any of you ever go see it? I saw it.
Yeah, I saw it.
In
yeah,
the theater. We kind of had to.
Commiserated.
Yeah, horrible movie. Horrible.
I was trying to think about which is the more pathetic act. The act of paying $20 to see it, or the act of paying just $10 but having to leave your house to do it. It was just you could edit that down to a really funny 20-minute funny or die video.
Yes,
because everything your mouth is your jaw is just dropping a little bit that anybody thought that these lines would be ever spoken by any human being ever.
His walk still gives me nightmares.
and there are some good performances in there. There are a lot of actors that are doing a good job despite having really nothing to
work with.
It's yeah, I mean it's I don't want to and I don't even want to make fun of Ashton Kutcher because he's like it's hard really to say to that any of. It's hard to say that anybody could have made a great performance out of that. I mean, I think that would have been you get to graduate with honors. If Juilliard doesn't know whether they're going to graduate you normally or like cum laude, they say, okay, here's a page of dialogue. You are Steve Jobs. You are tripping on acid. You're lying on a field and saying the following line: "What sort of man and woman would give away their only son to strangers and make me believe it? Go." It's like, and we will give you the university if you can make that happen.
I think if you see the trailer, which is available on iMore's website, you really saw the best of it.
Yes,
that's it. Just watch the trailer. In fact, let's start. This is. There's some good moments in here. The first apple. There's the first apple.
Steve.
Wow.
Oh wow.
Welcome to Apple Computer.
It's gonna be so cool.
Some of these moments are cool, right? The garage.
Steve teaches Woz what a computer is.
Yeah, that's fun.
It's heartwarming.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's Mike Markula.
Is this everything?
Startup. You expecting something else?
Maybe something a little less Manson family.
Some good lines. This is the moment that never happened, but I love the staging of it, which is where Steve announces the Apple II computer at the West Coast Computer Fair. This never happened, ever. There was no moment where people gathered around and Steve Jobs said, keynote. I've talked to people who were there, said that didn't happen. However, it looked a lot like the West Coast Computer Fair, which I've been to, you know, in my early days, a lot of us had. And so it was kind of fun to get to see
what could have been.
What could have been the West Coast Computer Fair. But this is an imaginary scene in it.
It's based on a real story.
As is the imaginary scene where Woz quits Apple.
Yes.
Yeah. What's a Macintosh?
The best way to explain it is it really is like fan fiction.
It's fan fiction.
Yes. If you're writing and yes, oh, I got to have the scene where he's tripping on acid. I got to have the scene where he breaks up with Woz. I got to have the scene where he's thrown out. I got to have the scene where he's they beg him to come back. And I got to have the scene where he just gets, it's like, oh, dear.
What about next? None of that.
There's no
next.
Right. There's no Pixar.
No Pixar.
It.
Nope.
It's yeah, and after was it Kotke who was the advisor on this movie? They had one insider.
It was Dan Kotke. Yeah.
And you can tell that there's lots and lots of detail until the big tearful scene in which Kotke says, "I'm a lot like Bushkin." It's like, I have to leave now, and I'm sorry you screwed me out of. I'm not quoting anything, but the scene in which he was not given stock options, he realizes that his faith might have been misapplied here, and he leaves. And after that point is where the real Kotke no longer has firsthand information. Is where and now we enter the hour long part where and now I'm going to file this paperwork to sue you. Well, I'm serving these papers on you.
Yeah.
Well, the corporation I'm filing exactly. It's like. Fast forward, the most to me, the one of the best Steve Jobs movies, the biopics you could make, not just the one that Adam Sorkin is working on, which is just focuses on three significant keynote events, which is also a good approach. What I want to see is just a movie that talks about his time at Next. Mm-hmm. Because as an outsider observer, as a fan of the character of Steve Jobs, which is what almost all of us on our planet are, not people who knew him, but people who are interested in this fictional character we have in our minds, the idea that he came into Next as this one person and came out of Next as seemingly another person, I really want to see the transformation.
That's a story, right there is a story.
Agreed.
You know, and that's actually, that was the period, the only time I spent any time with Steve, I spent the weekend with him. During that time when he was at Pixar, just before Apple rehired him, like 6 months before Apple rehired him. And he was bitter. He was a bitter, bitter man. But also still genius. And one of the things that he talked a lot about is what Apple could have done and should have done and should do.
Yep.
He had not stopped thinking about Apple for 1 minute in that time wandering in the wilderness. Here's Aaron Sorkin talking about the movie. When is that coming out? It should be 2014, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that it's not in limbo, but it's one of those places where it's not. I don't think it started shooting yet.
They're trying to get as much distance from the Ashton Kutcher film as possible.
I wonder who they're going to cast. That's going to be a big question.
They haven't cast it yet. Yeah.
Tell us how you're going to be conceiving this character of Jobs. I mean, he really seems to. He was a genius, and yet, as we know, a very flawed genius.
Sure.
So how are you thinking about Jobs?
Well, first, there's no point in writing about someone unless they're flawed.
I agree.
Perfect people who probably don't exist aren't that interesting.
Except for that Bible. That was the one book about... but that explains Dune, doesn't it?
Also don't exist. There's no such thing as a typical person. So, and Steve, I don't know if you knew him or not, was certainly atypical and a genius and extremely difficult.
And you did know him quite well, right?
I'm sorry?
You did know Jobs.
No, he didn't.
No, we knew each other over the phone. He would call me from time to time out of the blue just to compliment me on something he had just seen. And then the second to last time I spoke to him was he asked if I would help him with the Stanford commencement address. The last time I spoke,
that's an interesting story.
He asked me to write a Pixar movie, mm-hmm. I had told him that I love Pixar, that I'd never seen a studio make this kind of difference in movie making. That these were tremendous accomplishments in movies, but that I didn't think I would be able to make an inanimate object talk. And he said, once you make them talk, they won't be inanimate anymore. But it was the way that he said it that was so interesting to me. It was all but, he might as well have said, are you stupid?
That's Steve. Anything that came out of Steve's mouth had that kind of subtext. Are you a moron? Do you not get what's going on here? There's more on this. This is Tina... can't remember her last name, at the Daily Beast, when she was still at the Daily Beast interviewing Aaron Sorkin. It's something from about 6 months ago. So apparently he's going to do, everybody says, he'll be like backstage at three big keynotes, three 30-minute scenes from Steve Jobs' life in this movie. That's an interesting structure. Don't forget that Aaron Sorkin loves flashbacks. I think that does not necessarily... I think that may be the structure, but it may not eliminate scenes from elsewhere.
But it's like Sports Night and what... all the stuff is always behind the scenes of...
Right. Right. And I suspect that what'll happen is you'll see Steve pondering and then maybe some flashbacks to moments from other times.
I've never... Whenever I see biopics, I think the ones that try to start at the beginning and end at the ending...
Hard.
You only, if unless you're making a 38 to 61 year long movie, that's not going to work. You need to find something that is emblematic or something that you can decide what you need to tell people about this person and find one incident that you think encapsulates everything that you believe about this person.
Sorkin says it's like writing about the Beatles, a minefield of disappointment. Not for him, but that he will disappoint Jobs fans us. As Ashton did.
So much investment in it.
It'd be very difficult to have a win on that, I think.
That's why it's so important to identify Steve Jobs as a fictional character for, all but maybe a couple hundred people on this planet. Because we have our own images of who he was.
Yeah.
Some of us know people who knew him, but it's still sort of feeding on our perceptions of who he was. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, as a kid, you know, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were just such huge names just growing up as a kid. Like, I'll say it, as big as Carl Yastrzemski. And for a Boston Red Sox kid,
that's saying a lot.
That's a big deal. And so for that reason, I'll learn things. I'll hear firsthand stories, but it will always be, I have to at least be aware of, you know, the fact that I've been thinking about these people as, and then they were in a garage and then God struck touched the goldering gun and soldering gun of Steve Wozniak. And he decided, yes, video across a TV composite.
Yes. Jobs and Eric Clapton. Those are the big three right there.
Culture right there.
That's culture.
I'd buy that album.
Supergroup.
Heck of a cover band.
Supergroup. What else you guys want to talk about? Joni Ive and the Myth of the Tormented Genius. I think we did Johnny when we talked to Leander, and it's. I haven't read the book yet. It's on my Audible list, so...
Yeah, and you wonder why a figure like that decides that he doesn't want to give a lot of interviews and he doesn't want to be really out there on stage. Because, again, how many people are talking about, you know, Steve Jobs as though they know him? And now there are people that we're sort of like looking around for other characters to replace the cast member that left after season 28.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's entitled to have his own thoughts and his own opinions and allow his reality to be actual reality.
From ZDNet, David Brow writing, Apple Maps worldview now better than Google Maps.
No idea what that means.
I don't know what that means either. He's talking about mapping as a service, the idea that in Mavericks, mapping, now that Maps is in Mavericks, mapping may be in kind of integrated into more of the operating system. I don't know.
Some of the stuff is nice, like sending it from your computer to your phone is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I read it, and I'm not sure that I completely understood his justification for that statement. So I'm not going to really attack that conclusion.
Okay.
But the main
he's Australian. We can't blame.
Well, the main point he seemed to be making is that Google Maps is not nearly as pretty as Apple Maps, which is absolutely true. It's more fun to play with. It's more
accuracy is more important, however.
And the fact that it is now ships, it's the default mapping app on every single iPhone, and now ships on every single Mac, and now it's the mapping service that fuels every single Mac app that uses mapping. Mac users are going, and iPhone users are simply going to be more interested in it and more faithful users of it than Google Maps, which is true. I think that there's a fundamental principle that we sometimes overlook, which is the good enough principle. As soon as a service or a product is good enough, a lot of users are not going to be very interested in finding out why one might be better than the other, or one might be better for them than a competing service. However, I don't. If you're looking for something to learn geography with, something to navigate, it's to sort of get an idea of what the shape of a city is, I think that Apple Maps is better. But in the basic terms of I am here, I need to get there, and damn it, I need to be there by 3:30 p.m. because my meeting is at 3:45. I want Google Maps in my gun belt. I don't want
Apple. I've been trying Google Maps all week because I've been here and I don't know the area at all, and I have no sense of direction.
It's good.
And I don't think any of them are good enough. Like Apple Maps. Does some things very well, but getting me to the door that I want to go to is not one of them. The problem with Google Maps that I've been having is Apple Maps is better at saying stay to the right, go to the left, and preparing me for where I have to go. So with Google Maps, I have less warning, so I'm more apt to make mistakes because I'm all the way in the wrong lane.
Right.
But also, I'm driving, and all of a sudden it thinks I'm on the overpass. Or yesterday, it took me and my friend Phil, Google Maps recommended a route that took us an hour and a half to get from Palo Alto to San Jose.
Hmm.
When it just took us off the highway. And it did that this morning when I tried to come here. None of this stuff is good enough. I think we should be, you know, it's such an important service. We should be holding all these companies to a much higher standard. They're definitely good, but they could be a lot better.
Hmm. If you really want to appeal to Australians, just turn the map upside down. There's no reason Europe should be on top. That's only because Europeans made the map.
The Peterson projection.
Yeah. Let's just reverse the damn thing. Wasn't that Aaron Sorkin wrote about that
in the West Wing?
Yes. It all comes back to Aaron Sorkin.
It was Big Block of Cheese Day.
Yes.
That is actually an excellent episode.
Yes.
Excellent series.
You're telling me Germany isn't where I think it is?
Andrew Nothing Johnson is. Had a big block of cheese. I invited all the people to come in and partake of it.
Thanks, Leo. Wrong Leo.
Yeah, Leo McCary. Or Leo, no, what?
Yeah, Leo McCary.
McCary, yeah. So is the iPod dead? Queries iMore.com. It's Chris Parsons writing for iMore, but you guys were talking about it on the
We talked about that on the last earnings report when Apple didn't even have the iPod in the beginning of the PR
and
press
in
release.
And the nominally what used to be the iPod announcement in October or September, not a word about an iPod.
They got space gray in a press release.
Yeah.
Right, and that was it.
So I got to think the iPod Touch is a viable product because it's an iPhone or should be an iPhone minus the phone.
It's the only contract-free way to get access to the iOS app library, so that's going to be a big deal. I also think that the cheapest one, I think there's always going to be a need for an iPod that has physical clickable controls because there are going to be people that, if you're operating with gloves or if you need to not be able to look at what you're doing while you're activating something, you're going to want that. Also, there are people who want an iPod that is I wouldn't say disposable. $50 or $60 isn't disposable income, at least not for me. But if it goes through the wash or if it gets lost, is not the big deal that losing an iPhone would be. But it's kind of interesting. I mean, let's look what happened today. The Moto G arrived in my office, and this is Motorola's $179 buy it and you own it, bring your own phone. And it suddenly occurred to me that it's certainly not the best phone you can buy, but if you think of it as a $179 Android version of the iPod Touch, where $179, no contract, you own it, and you get access to the full Google Play Store, you get the very latest version of the operating system, and unlike the iPod Touch, which is much slimmer and more expensive, this actually has GPS in it, so you can actually use it for navigation. It's an interesting twist. The question is going to be, which is more important, having that Apple brand available at a low price point or making sure that anybody who wants iOS can get it with as few barriers as possible?
It's kind of the conclusion you guys came to, right? Is that, well, the Touch was the only one that made any sense, I guess.
The thing is interesting, when you look at Apple's revenue for the iPod, it's just going down and down. And if the iPod Touch is still half the revenue from the iPod line, iPod Touch is going down and down as well.
Right.
And that's counterintuitive. But when you look at something like the iPad Mini, which isn't that much more expensive, but is a much better experience.
Yeah, the Touch starts at $300. It's not cheap.
And the $300 is now what'll get you an iPad. The 16 gigabyte is $229.
$229 is the cheapest.
The last generation iPad Mini is going for $299 now, and the iPhone C, as much as it 5C, as much as it's still a phone, Apple is positioning it in iPod packaging, and they want it to sit on the shelf and be colorful and be that thing you buy. So as that is ramping down, I think Apple is ramping up on products to take its place.
You made a good point, Andy, that the Moto G is less than the cheapest iPod Touch, outright.
Yeah. And you can, and at any point you can slap a SIM card in it and actually.
And now it's a phone. Yeah, but
people who would want something like that, I don't think this would be as desirable as an iPod Touch. Really, my only qualm about the iPod Touch at this point is that does Apple care about this thing? Next year, is this device still going to be around, or are they going to continue to aggressively upgrade it, or is this going to be like an orphan product like the iPod Classic, where yes, I suppose technically, if you walk into the Apple store and you really have a lot of endurance to convince someone who works there that yes, you do still buy this, and yes, you would not be committing you wouldn't be committing an inappropriate act by selling me one. It's just not a. Ugh.
Will there be an iPhone 6 version?
I just wish we're getting more love from Apple. That's all. It makes me a little bit worried that it's not being promoted as the really cool, very important product it is. We need a pocketable version of iOS. Your good point about how the price differential between the iPod Touch and the iPad Mini is not that great, but an iPad Mini is still this honking big. You need something that is this honking big.
My 10-year-old niece has an iPod Touch. And she has an iPod Touch because there's no way her parents are going to buy her a phone. And as neat an idea as what Andy's talking about with the Moto G you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As neat an idea as that is of taking out the SIM card, that's not something that her parents are going to do. It's not even something that her parents are going to think about.
Right.
There is one other thing to point out. Info Scout, I guess, is the one that was sort of tracking different sales of different tablets and smartphones and things like that online. I want to say it was number 11. I honestly don't remember off the top of my head, but the 16 gigabyte iPod Touch was one of the top 20 selling items at Target on Black Friday.
Huh.
So, I mean, it's still got some place. Now, is that place in Walmart and in Target, you know, sort of like a bit of discoverability for people who, for whatever reason, are not going to walk into an Apple store? Maybe. Is it just for kids? Maybe it's that too. But I mean, it's also kind of, you know, the gateway iOS device for some people. And then to Andy's point as well about, you know, the iPad mini, that size is a huge deal. I mean, if you want to get your kids something that they can play music on, you know, something that they're going to put in their pocket and go outside with, well, they're not going to do that with the iPad mini, but they could certainly do it with the iPod Touch. And then it's just a notch to get them onto the phone. So, I mean, at the very least, it sticks around. I mean, once those kids are old enough to, okay, well, I'm buying them their phone, they're already in the iOS ecosystem at that point. So the $99 iPhone 5C or whatever it's called by the time she's old enough to get one is a natural move, it seems.
Apple's only updating the iPod Touches when they do a new iPhone. So the iPhone 5 had the new iPod Touch, and they'll do another one presumably when the iPhone 6 comes out. But my godchildren love it. They're 5 years old and 8 years old. They both sit there with Duolingo, which you recommended on a previous show.
Love it. Isn't it fun?
They're learning. They help with their French, and it helps them with it. They're learning Italian on it, too.
And that's perfect for an iPod Touch.
Yeah.
I hope Apple sees that.
Oh, I think they will. I think it's on a two-year upgrade cycle, not a one-year upgrade cycle like the iPhone.
Yeah, but they could still have at least put it in the group photo. You know, I'm serious. I mean, when you got the group photo of everybody that you're proud of in the company and you're the one person who was not on the email invite list, you got to think that it's time to update your profile on LinkedIn.
And I just feel like there's a risk that this is getting an opportunity to less expensive Android devices. And the last thing you want to do is get Apple people out of the Apple ecosystem at all, because the risk is that they'll slowly migrate out of it.
Well, that's the thing. When you keep seeing the market share surveys, Apple has 0% market share of under $400 phones.
Right. Because they don't make one.
Yes. So the iPod Touch traditionally filled in that void.
Right.
Did you catch the Kantar numbers, though, about who the big iPhone 5C buyers are? I think this was out yesterday. I can't remember if it was in Macworld or The Telegraph or both, actually, I guess. But according to Kantar World Panel, half or almost half of the people who bought an iPhone 5C the first month and a half that they were out were switchers from Android.
Android switchers. That's who's buying. You know, three times as many people are buying 5S's than the 5C, but of the people who buy the 5C...
It's an interesting idea because, I mean, I wonder then what that's based on. Is it people have wanted the iPhone, but they couldn't justify spending $200 and they didn't want last year's model as well? I mean, I don't know what that... That move is kind of weird to me.
The way it was,
assuming those numbers hold up.
I have a theory, but Lorene, let's hear from you first.
No, just the way it made sense to me was that the iPhone 5S is like the blockbuster summer movie. It comes out once a year, tons of people go buy it, and then it kind of slowly declines until the next year, where the iPhone 5C was meant to be a TV series that's just there week after week after week, and people come in and like it and buy it, you know, when they're on the...
I think the 5C appeals to people when they hold it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought that we're seeing a skew between how many people who buy, just in general, year to year, how many people who buy new iPhones are existing iPhone owners who are upgrading versus how many people just are naturally, I could buy any phone, I've decided to buy this phone this year. Because I don't think that anybody who is going from an iPhone 4 or 4S or even a 3GS would say, I want the cheap plastic 5C $99 one. They will say, I'm an iPhone user. I want the real one, the $199 one. Whereas an Android user would just simply say any switch to iPhone would be a remarkable enough upgrade that they wouldn't necessarily say, I definitely want the 5S.
My 21-year-old daughter has a 4S. And she wants a 5C for Christmas.
I've heard a lot of geeks say that they wish they could get the 5S internals in a 5C body because they just love the way that plastic looks and feels.
She says either pink or yellow. And I think I would guess, this here's my theory, Andy and Ken, is that what happens is that the 5C appeals to people who have not made a decision when they walk into a phone store. They aren't going in looking for any particular phone. They're just going in to get a phone. Yeah. And they try them all. It's $99. You know, they're not aware of the differentials and all of that. They're not aware of the...
Yeah, nor should they be.
They be. And they feel it. They hold it. They go, I like it. Oh, it's an iPhone. Yeah, that'd be good.
I heard of that.
I mean, it's not people like us who have a decision, know what we want going in.
Yeah. Right. And there were a lot of the financial analysts said that as soon as the iPhone 5C came out, not every one of them said that. I mean, certainly more of them said, oh, well, this thing's bad. This thing's terrible. This thing isn't selling. There were a few of the financial analysts, though, and certainly some industry analysts as well, who said where this thing is really going to, where you're going to see how it's doing is around the holidays. When, you know, people are at the mall, they're going and they're, you know, ending up in Apple stores or they're ending up other places where they have these phones. And getting really just their first look at them because they weren't going to be the people that rushed out. I mean, there was nothing, and the 5C wasn't really made for the people who were going to be rushing out, right? I mean, yeah. Like you're saying, it's for the people who are, you know, oh, it's time to get a phone or it's time to replace my phone or, you know, it's time to finally get a smartphone.
And by the way, Abby thinks the iPhone 5C is $99. Mm-hmm. She thinks it's $99.
That's all you ever see.
Yeah. She doesn't. I said, "Well, you know, you're not due for an upgrade, so it's $600 or $500." Yeah. She was shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Shocked to find out subsidies are going on in this establishment. Yes.
$99 phone, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, she says it's only $100. I want that phone.
Yeah.
And I think that's I mean, she's probably more sophisticated than a lot of people, and I think that's a fairly normal reaction. Oh, it's $99. It's colorful. I'll take it.
Yep.
I think it's also a way we have to remind ourselves that I don't think that there are a lot of people for whom they don't know and they don't care about the difference between a lot of different phones. Once a group of phone has the same kind of features, at that point it's like, oh, this one is in black. Which, how about this other one also available only in black? Well, this one is available in black and silver.
Right.
Well, this one is available in five colors. Oh, great. Yep. I'll take the red one. And that's what makes them want to get that phone.
That's right.
It's a really consumery sort of device.
Yep.
It's meant to be popular.
We're going to take a break, and then we'll take your picks of the week. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Mac OS Ken Ray from MacOSKen.com, and Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by Smile Software, those great guys at Smile, and gals, I should say, because Gene McDonald is definitely a gal, have a new product, PDF Pen Scan Plus. Use your phone as a scanner, take a picture, turn it into a PDF, and OCR it in a single step. Multi-page documents, too. Then you can send it to the cloud or open it in PDF Pen, add to it, turn it into a form, whatever you want. It knows about edges. It does a great job. Get rid of the paper. You know, I have in my parts closet a bunch of receipt scanning, you know, the Scan Pro and stuff. This is so much easier. You just take a picture of it, OCR it, save it, and you got it. $4.99 right now on the App Store. I really like this. One-touch scanning from your iPhone or your iPad camera. Use the OCR to convert it into searchable PDFs. The app does it. It's not uploading it to the cloud to do the OCR, so you don't have to be connected. This would be perfect for an iPod Touch.
Absolutely.
16 languages supported in the optical character recognition. And the special price is limited time only. So get it now, $4.99 at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. Actually, if you go there, it'll put you to the App Store. Smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. Do go there, though, so that we get credit for the fact that you heard about it first on MacBreak Weekly. It's a really great idea. And the iPad app, you know, it's universal, so it works. It's not a blown up iPhone app. It works on the iPad just like a native iPad app. And you could save your scans to iCloud. They're the one company that's figured out how iCloud works. I don't know how they got that working. That's awesome. Also, Dropbox, Evernote, and other cloud based services. Thank you, Smile. Another great product. SmileSoftware.com/MacBreak. Not smack break, smack break, Mac break. SmileSoftware.com/MacBreak. Andy Iannacco must have something wonderful up his sleeves. He always does.
I think I do. Although I can't believe that I let this go this far when we're talking about Apple's acquisition of Topsy and also mentioning Bob's Burgers. Topsy was the name of the elephant that Thomas Edison had electrocuted.
That's
as a way to
right.
prove that alternating current was dangerous.
Oh, also, which also you think that's why
really
they call
cool,
it Topsy?
Really cool song. Well, maybe. I'm just thinking that maybe we should force them to open up the papers on this. I don't know if they're going to be killing more animals.
No more animals may die.
Perhaps we're seeing a peek at Microsoft's new ad campaign. What isn't Apple telling us? Okay, thing of the week. Studio Neat made one of my favorite little devices for the iPhone. It's called the Glyph. And I loved it because it's just so clever. This is a tripod mount and like easel stand for iPhone 4, 4S, and 5, where you see the tripod mount. So you can either put it in this little slot right here and use it as a tripod stand, or you could use this little grippy sort of thing to sort of grip it onto the side of the screen, and it would like stand up on the table like an easel. So now they came up with a new version of this, because the only problem, this is really, really brilliant. The only problem is that it really is only for the iPhone 4, 4S, and 5S. Now they came up with this new one, the new Glyph, which is much the same thing, only it is completely adjustable. So it's whatever phone you have now and whatever phone you're going to have in the next couple of years, you take a hex key that goes inside the tripod mount, and you adjust the width of these jaws and the width of these jaws. And then once you've done that once and you don't have to have that hex key again, now you've made it the perfect size for not only whatever phone you have, but whatever case you like to keep it in. And that, even if you are a committed iPhone 5 user, it means that you won't have to take your phone out of your case to use this. So you get the both of those great features, in which you have the tripod mount, and you can also stick it into here and use it as an easel stand. And it's just really, really great. Again, you can lose the hex key after you've done with it, because you only need to make that adjustment once. It also comes with this little adapter here, so that if you want to wear it like a pendant, you could do that, or hang it as a Christmas ornament, or perhaps more practically, it screws into the tripod mount. Attach a cord to this and stretch that down to your foot, and step on it and stretch it, and you can actually use it as sort of a little like portable, very, very portable stabilizer or tripod, because the tension of the string between your foot and this will actually hold the camera very, very steady. Okay. Again, whereas the first Glyph got 10 points out of 10 for clever, this is 9 points out of 9 for 10 for clever. Still an A, and still not terribly expensive. It's $30, but very, very neat piece of kit, and something that easily fits in any sort of bag. It's going to be part of my gift guide this year, because it's exactly the sort of thing I love to give as a gift, where people may not... It's not available like at every Walmart. And as soon as you see one, say, "Wow, where did you get that? That's so cool." Maybe it's not cool, but okay, it's useful. It's useful now.
Yeah, and of course, someday we'll all have $300 3D printers and be able to print those just anytime we need them.
I don't doubt it.
But until that day, go get it.
And Amazon drones will deliver them for us. Exactly. Even better. We won't have to carry these around. We'll just simply say, "Oh, I wish I brought a tripod mount." Oh, wait a minute. Beep, beep, beep.
Can't we print our own drone?
Hey, we didn't talk about that that story, the 60-minute story with Jeff Bezos and the drones. He tells Charlie Rose, "I'm going to show you something no one else has seen before. Drones delivering packages within 30 minutes in major metropolitan areas." There is some question about whether the FAA would ever approve such a thing.
And UPS said, we're doing that too.
It's autonomous. They're not guided. They have the address programmed in. They go drone, bring. What you think? That's just a bit of stagecraft on Jeff Bezos's part.
Let's keep in mind that this is a guy who is building his own space fleet. That's not a joke. He's invested heavily in private commercial space flight. So this is a guy who, and also this is a guy who sold the Kindle when there was no market for it, knowing that perhaps in 4 or 5 years from now, this is going to be a worthy investment. So I don't think that it's not like the famous Microsoft CES keynote devices, where, okay, they have the ability to manufacture two of these for demo purposes and we'll never see it again. I think that they are actively working on it. And it was certainly very, very opportune to use this real, very prime TV spot to show this really cool thing that everybody's going to be talking about all day on Monday. During a time when people are hopefully going to be thinking about shopping on Amazon instead of in other places. But you're right. I mean, I think I stopped after coming up with a list of 15 ways in which this does not seem possible, but we'll see.
I like your tweet, Andy, when you said that at least people could tear up their Cyber Monday jokes and write drone jokes all week. Yeah.
According to R. John Hansman in the MIT Technology Review, it's technically totally feasible. The key issues would be if the FAA allows this kind of operation. They should. And if the business case makes sense, there's a startup in Palo Alto called MatterNet, which tested drones as a way to deliver supplies to refugee camps in Haiti. Found it cost only 20 to 70 cents to deliver a 2-kilogram package 10 kilometers. That's a significant savings over truck delivery.
I saw Jonathan White on Twitter ask about the battery life, though, because if you have like a Parrot drone or something, it lasts for a few minutes, and that's probably not enough to reach most.
Well, I think that that's what he addressed. He said, what is it, 5-kilometer radius? I can't, I can't remember what he said.
10-mile range, I think.
10-mile range. Yeah. So that's probably has to do. They have to go deliver, come
and
back,
carry a parcel,
and get charged.
Though,
yeah, well.
My big disconnect is I can't imagine what it is that people need within 30 minutes that desperately.
Pizza, Andy.
That this infrastructure. No, actually, I made the joke clean urine during for sports
clean
teams.
Clean urine.
someone on Twitter like sort of like beat me and saying condoms. Like, okay.
Now, this is one remaining disadvantage Apple has over brick and mortar stores, which is you can go to a brick and mortar store and get it. And if Amazon can save you a trip to a brick and mortar store on anything, and have it within 30 minutes, that's a kind of a, I think that's a reasonable thing to be working.
You can order
on.
Drones, and the world's going to end. I need 2 drones immediately.
I just hate to see the skies filled with autonomous drones. It seems dangerous.
Yeah, like Coruscant.
It's just this basic idea of having these machines whirring through the air, where. I just don't see them solving the problem of what happens when there's something happening. What happens when there's someone has a beach umbrella up in the front yard that is not on Google Maps
exactly.
yet?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the drones are smart. They'll say it's like autonomous vehicles. They'll go around.
Can the drones read their Kindle on takeoff and landing?
So Andy's Glyph was a Kickstarter project. I've got something that was a Kickstarter project. Called the Mag Cozy, and I might have mentioned this before because Jeff Needles said we needed them, and we ordered them, and they're great. This is something I think many people need. You can get them on Amazon for around $7. It's a little rubber or plastic dongle that hooks onto your, and we have a lot of these, power adapter, the old school power adapter, and holds the new school adapter to go on it so that you can use your old school power plug, your old school MagSafe with your new MagSafe. Never again. These are expensive, these adapters, and I'm always afraid of losing them because they're teensy tiny. Now, I'm looking. It looks like I've done this wrong. You're supposed to loop this through or something. But I think this is a great – I bought a bunch of them for the studio, and I have them at home, and I will vouch for the fact that they work, they do the job, and you don't lose your MagSafe adapter. What is that called if it's an adapter?
A MagSafe adapter.
Okay. And the Mag Cozy is $6.99, a successful Kickstarter that is now available on Amazon. That's the kind of thing you could have within 30 minutes from a drone. The Mag Cozy. And we got them. They come in many colors. What do we get? I think I got red at home because it's, more jazzy.
Keep losing those things too.
Yeah, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the cost of losing one of them pays for 10 Mag Cozies. Yes. Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week. I mentioned last week that we were doing a show on transcoding, a really geeky show on transcoding. So Don Melton, if you're not familiar with him, he's the guy who did Safari and WebKit for Apple. Really smart guy. He's retired now, and he's spending a lot of time on H.264. And as we all know, Blu-ray on the Mac is a bag of hurt. It is not supplied for you by Apple. You've got to basically do it yourself. He starts off by saying that transcoding is not for everybody. It's not for most people. You can just buy your stuff on iTunes and enjoy. You don't have to worry about it. You shouldn't have to worry about it. But if you're the kind of person who watches Jaws or watches Saving Private Ryan and the murkiness of the video drives you out of your mind and you know that you could do better by not using default settings and by tweaking it yourself, he actually went through and he put together a list of really good tools to use on the Mac for transcoding. And he also wrote 3 scripts of his own. One that does transcoding, one that detects the crop because, sometimes, like, for example, The Dark Knight will change from regular resolution from 69 to IMAX halfway through the movie and back. So if you let automatic cropping, it'll just cut off all that content for you.
I didn't know that. Wow.
So he does that. And he also has, if you want to convert from MP4 to Matroska format. So there's a ton of stuff in there. And he spends about 2.5 hours explaining in incredibly nerdy detail all the pros and cons. And he explains how Apple does the transcoding for iTunes, what they kind of settings that they use for it, or at least what he surmises that they use for it.
This is when a guy's retired, when he spends a lot of energy figuring out and writing shell scripts.
He's pursuing his passion.
And is he transcoding from Blu-rays?
Yes. So every time a new version of X.264 comes out, he re-encodes his entire 200-plus disc Blu-ray collection.
Say that again. Every time a new version of comes out, he re-transcodes everything.
He starts re-transcoding everything again because he thinks he can do a better job.
Wow. He's using Handbrake mostly?
He's using Handbrake. He uses a bunch of tools, but Handbrake, yeah, the nightly builds he likes, especially when they do update the X.264. So this is high-level ninja geekery, so it's not for everybody. But again, if you're using a Mac user and you want to do this stuff.
I might call it slightly OCD.
Yes.
I'm just glad that he's using his massive retiree powers for good instead of evil.
That's true.
This is the sort of obsessiveness that turns some people to be measuring the length of everybody's grass in every yard to make sure they're within ordinances.
Or decides to buy up every patent that's available and start a patent troll operation.
Yeah.
So yes, this is good. Start writing shell scripts in your retirement. Much better.
So if you want to roll your own, and one of the reasons also is if you're traveling, if you use a standard iTunes
download,
this is
actually really
great. It's 1.6 gigabytes. You know, and you can't put that many on a modern device, but you can shrink them down to 300 megabytes if you'd like to make them portable. So there's a lot of really good stuff in there.
So you have to get this from the show notes on imore.com because the links go to things like GitHub and stuff. So
there's Don's GitHub site.
Yeah, there's no central website, in other words. But your show notes become the central website.
He will blog it when he has time.
Vector 22, Don Melton transcoding video. He's got the transcodevideo.sh, the detectcrop.sh, the convert MP4 to Matroska.sh, Handbrake. Oh, this is amazing.
And he's continually updating the script. So whenever you go to the link, you'll have the latest version of it.
Wow. And he also points to XBMC and Plex,
yes,
which would be two very good ways to play these back.
Yeah, there's a segment on managing your media. His wife at one point started to play something, and she saw, BTFS-S10E1, and she said, I have no idea what that means. So he created a more...
Always a problem.
He pointed out a more human-friendly interface.
File name system. Boy, I'm tempted now to just set up... first of all, I'd have to set up a lot of hardware. And how does he rip? He doesn't rip on a Mac.
Yeah, he does. He has an external Blu-ray drive.
And it works?
He mentioned some tools. And
it solves the copy protection issues?
I believe he covers all that sort of... In jurisdictions where it applies to you. Like if your government taxes you for blank media anyway.
Right. As in Canada.
Yes.
Is he Canadian?
No. He's I believe in this... He's in California still. Okay.
Where we in fact will put somebody in jail for doing this.
And sometimes, for example, you might buy stuff on iTunes and then the company decides it's no longer available there. But if you have it on Blu-ray, you have it on Blu-ray.
These things happen.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. That's a good one. Thank you, Don, and thank you, Renee. And now finally to Mac OS Ken Ray of macosken.com. Do you have a pick for us, sir?
Yes. Do you remember Ari X?
No.
Do you know him? When he was 13, he was a big part of the Jailbreak community. I actually interviewed him, 6 years ago now, I guess. He is older.
And wiser now.
Yes. Well, yes, I think so. He came out with an app called Desk Connect, which was featured on the App Store for a bit.
I actually love this app.
Yeah. Oh, so you know it.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
For people who don't know it, it's basically just an incredibly easy way to share files between your iOS devices and your Mac. It just came out with an update, so now you can actually choose where it goes, because initially when he wrote it, if you had something that you were sending from one thing to another, it was just you drop it onto Desk Connect, and all of a sudden it would show up on all of your other devices. So if I was, trying to send something to my phone on my Mac, it would go to my phone and it would go to my iPad because I have it on both. And, same thing all around. The most recent update now lets you choose where you want it to go. Because he's a friend, I talked to him about it and I was kind of like, oh, well, that's kind of neat. And then I almost immediately started using it at least two or three times a day.
This is in lieu of AirDrop.
Yes, in lieu of AirDrop, what I was doing.
Which I've never been able to get to work, by the way.
I was either emailing stuff to myself or sending stuff, via message from one thing to another, or waiting for PhotoStream to actually catch up with what I had, photographed or snapped a picture of online. Because that's the kind of thing I'm using it for, like for iChart. If there's a new app and I go and I download it and I want to show what the difference is, I just snap a picture of it and then drop it through Desk Connect to my Mac now. And it doesn't seem like that would be that big a deal. It saved me maybe 30 seconds to a minute. But if you're doing that four or five times while trying to put something together, then it's saving you like 5 minutes, and that's kind of awesome. Cool. I just like the control of it. I will say there's one thing that kind of freaks people out. The stuff does live on his servers for 30 days. I've known Ari for a long time. Personally, I trust him. Maybe one day he'll end up being an evil overlord genius, and I will have been wrong about that, but okay. If that's something that concerns you, then it's not for sensitive information. If that's something that concerns you, but, you know, I'm sending screenshots from my phone to my Mac. And so for me, it's absolutely fantastic how incredibly, incredibly simply and easily that works. So that would be my pick. It's free, which is something else I asked him about. You know, it seems like something people would pay for, but he wasn't interested in getting paid for this. So, I mean, it's out there and people can use it. And it's one of those things where if you hear that description or if you just try it, either it's going to be something that you're going to use and you're going to really be grateful for it, or you're going to go, oh, well, that's interesting, and it won't be something you use. It's very much a, seems to me it's very much a case-specific thing, but if it is something that solves a problem for you, then it's just a fantastic problem solver.
So very cool.
Connect.
Desk Connect. You picked that, I think, at one point, or somebody mentioned it. Yeah. Very good. Mac OS Ken, go buy his new iChart. It's on the App Store. I'm sorry, the newsstand, which is kind of like the App Store. It's a special segregated ghetto of the App Store. It's in there.
It's an affluent gated community.
It's a gated community. Pardon me.
It's where the cool people are. You probably haven't heard.
Where all the cool people hang.
And if you heard of it, they probably won't even let you in because they're really selective about
it. Jim Dalrymple still loves the newsstand. He's got his app there, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can also catch Ken's daily Mac News breaks at macosken.com. Thanks, Ken. Great to see you again. Congratulations.
Thank you very
That's
much.
Wonderful.
Thanks for having me. Thank
That's
you.
Wonderful. How does your wife feel about your geeky habit?
Which one?
Which wife?
No.
Which habit?
No, which geeky habit? Because, my goodness, there are several. There are many. There's the Mac thing. There's the newsstand thing. It's just, you know, it's ridiculous. Someday, I plan to go back outside. I'm very excited about that.
The sun is still there.
Renee Ritchie had to actually leave town to get here.
It's like summer here, Leo. I left the snow and the freezing cold, and it's...
Yeah. It's 48 degrees. Balmy.
Balmy.
You're in beautiful Petaluma.
In Fahrenheit.
Yeah, I don't know what it is in Celsius.
And we just, I heard just before the show, we launched Bitcoin on our store today. So if you decide you want to pay, if you want to buy stuff for your iPhone or BlackBerry or Android device using Bitcoins, as of today, all the Mobile Nation stores accept Bitcoins.
That's a risky proposition for both sides.
I think they just, like, it's avant-garde technology and we're a bunch of geeks and they want to see if they can do it. Yeah.
But because it's so volatile, you never know, really. It's like...
I have no idea how they're going to do it, but they're doing it.
Yeah.
But you give smart people a difficult job to do, Leo, and it makes them
like
happy.
They like it. They actually embrace it. Thanks also, of course, to Andy Nocco, as always, from the Chicago Sun-Times. Really great to have you, Andy.
I'll point out that the Chicago Sun-Times is an American newspaper, so we are accepting canned goods, used clothing in good condition. My editor's assistant could use a sofa for her loft. So if you a sofa that you know, no, yeah, no, we're doing great. Don't worry about us. We're fine. We're fine.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC every Tuesday. Right here on the Twit Network. And this show is not going to move. Starting in January, some of our shows are moving, but Mac Break Weekly will stay right where it is, mostly because that way we know we'll miss any major Apple announcements by just a few minutes.
It lets Apple be certain of their schedule.
It helps Apple. Yeah. That's why we do it. That way Apple doesn't have to move the press announcements around, and they can just do it at 2 in the afternoon. Pacific time on Tuesday, just like they always do.
This dance is just going to continue and continue until suddenly the Apple and this show is just going to finally realize they love each other and start that relationship.
We'll hug it out.
Exactly what's going to happen. We're getting married and we're moving in together.
One of those loud, shouty arguments that suddenly ends in everybody kissing.
Hug it out, Andy.
There's this fine line between love and hate. As I've learned many times. Thank you all for joining us.
And Leo still won't be invited to the wedding.
No, isn't that ironic? If you want to watch live, do. But if you can't, you, of course, can always get on-demand audio and video after the fact, wherever finer netcasts are aggregated, or here at twit.tv/MBW. If you'd like to be in our live studio audience, thank you, sir. Live studio audience of one. You can just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll set an extra comfy chair out for you. Thanks for being here. Now get back to work, because you know what? Break time's over.